Homer Simpson described the rhythm of modern American life in the mid-1990s as gas, brake, honk, gas, brake, honk, gas, brake, punch. Linda Leeming expected that she would find some refuge from that rhythm when she traveled to Bhutan in 1994, but she didn't expect to fall in love with the country and meet her future husband there, never to return to her old ways of American life. She was on our show in August to discuss her memoir, Married to Bhutan, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss, and we are re-airing that conversation for you now. I began by saying that I gathered Bhutan is quite a mellow place, and I asked Linda Leeming, are they even aware that there's a show called The Simpsons?
Yes, The Simpsons is in Bhutan, and I've actually watched it there.
What would they make of it?
Oh, they love it. You know, the Bhutanese have a great sense of humor. That's really one of the main reasons I was drawn to them. And I actually met Bhutanese here in New York at the UN before I even went there. So my connection is really with the people.
So had they enticed you to visit Bhutan?
They said, you must visit Bhutan. And it was years. You know, I kept coming here and... Then finally in 1994, I was taking a huge round-the-world trip, and I went to Bhutan, and I met friends afterwards in Italy and kept talking about Bhutan. They were really irritated.
Well, it was not one of the stop-offs like Nepal or one of the other places that Westerners tended to go to in Asia, even though it's right next to Nepal.
It's true. The Bhutanese are into, I guess, high-dollar, low-volume tourism. They don't want a lot of people there because there it's an ecological hotspot. It's really, really a guarded secret, I think.
And do you just fly nonstop?
You go, we usually go LAX to Hong Kong to Bangkok to Calcutta to Paro. Mm-hmm. Paro is the little airport. It's the second highest airport in the world. La Paz, Bolivia is the highest, but it's a tiny little valley. They say the dogs have to wag their tails up and down because it's a really skinny little valley. And it's a little bit of a harrowing flight, about 80-seat airplane, a little four engines, mm-hmm. that goes really fast, starts really fast, and stops really fast.
And you're in the middle of the Himalayas there?
In the middle of the eastern Himalayas, and it's absolutely these little lush valleys that the Bhutanese say they kind of got pushed up in there. They fought a war with the British for the plains right below, so they're up in these little valleys, and they kept getting attacked by the Tibetans because that's a very hot, Tibet's just a big old plateau, and nothing grows there. But these little, about 20, 30 little sheltered valleys in the Himalayas, in that respect, it really is Shangri-La. It never gets really cold. Oh, it has every climate zone from glacier to jungle.
You mentioned the British and the Tibetans. Has Bhutan ever been colonized?
Bhutan has never been colonized, and I think that's why I married a Bhutanese. I married a really fabulous, interesting man. He's a Tonka painter. Tonkas are these scroll-like religious paintings that he does. And he says he's a boomtop, and that's a... There's all different kinds of people that are in that, you know, like it's to me, it's kind of akin to tribal. That's a whole very tribal region, you know, from Pakistan on over.
Well, it's a diverse group of people. We'll get into
diverse
that in a little
group.
Bit.
And he says boomtops don't have the muscles in their legs to go backwards.
Now, you arrived the first time. How long did you stay?
I stayed 2 weeks the first time.
But you were traveling alone?
I was. But in Bhutan, you go with a driver and a guide, and they were, you use the word mellow, they were the yardstick by which we measure mellow. They were super mellow.
So you came back to the United States after mm-hmm. your first visit to Bhutan. Did you experience some kind of a culture shock?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be back in Bhutan. I said in the book that I felt like I'd found the center of the universe, and I don't know, that sounds maybe even cliche, but it's just true.
Well, what were you leaving?
What was I leaving?
Here.
Oh, well, I was a freelance writer and good clients, good job. I never married, so I liked traveling. I liked being independent. And so I was leaving everything, actually. I sold everything.
Now, what's the culture like? I would assume that it receives strong influences from its neighbors.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Buddhism.
It's Buddhist. Yes. It's Mahayana Buddhism, and that's a tantric strain of Buddhism that's indigenous to Tibet. And but the It's like Christianity. There are different sects. Like my mm-hmm. husband's Dorje Lingpa. There's Kayupa. There's all kinds of different sects, and it's a little esoteric for me because I always say I took the back door into Buddhism, and because that's not, I guess that was the draw, but I didn't really know it.
Well, a lot of people who find Tibetan Buddhism appealing wind up going to Nepal.
That's true, yeah, Nepal.
And then the Dalai Lama lives in India, which mm-hmm. is also a neighbor of Bhutan.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And, you know, like a lot of places in the world, those are just kind of geopolitical boundaries that were inflicted on that region. So there's a lot of flow. That region it's a bit of a volatile region of the world because there's intense migration. There's tribals. Right now, and probably for centuries, a lot of economic and political instability. But Bhutan is just sort of a little jewel, a little oasis of stability.
Well, what is is it an agricultural?
Yes. I just heard last night, I did a talk, and so they were saying that 60% agrarian, 62% agrarian, and that's sustenance farmers. So, you know, you get back up in these little Himalayan valleys where it takes 2 to 5 days to walk to a road. So they're sustenance farmers. There's no reason to be otherwise because in 20% arable land in a country that's 200 miles from east to west and 100 miles from north to south.
You first visited Bhutan in 1994. How much has the country changed over those years?
There's rural to urban migration for sure. Thimphu was maybe 30,000 people in 1994. Now it's probably upwards of 100,000. But it's a fairly wide valley, and it's still not the country of Bhutan's about 700,000 people, and it's the least populated country in Asia. But you know, when I went there, we could watch VCR, you know, we could watch videos, we could, people had satellites. So in that respect, they had that kind of thing. They're always looking, I mean, you could get fax machines and things like that. Now in 1999, television came. But to be clear, in Thimphu and in the, you know, in the towns, you can get television, but more than half the country, more than half the people are still waiting for electricity. Oh, well, no, that's not right. Maybe a quarter of the people still.
You're right about the Bhutanese relationship to time. Is that something you really appreciate about Bhutan?
Yes, I started the book about that because to me that was the most stark difference between being there and being here in the West. Time is cyclical to them. My husband is agrarian. It's an agrarian society, so they're close to the earth. We eat seasonally in Bhutan. Also, with Buddhism, there's it's a cycle of birth and rebirth. So there's a lot of reasons that time is different.
So what does that mean in terms of appointments? If this interview were taking place in Bhutan, what time would you have arrived?
I was here on time. I was here 20 minutes early, as per the producer's suggestion. But in Bhutan, I think, you know, if I was – it was raining, so I might have gotten here on time. But I would have – as long as I was hitting it right around 2 hours before or after.
And I couldn't get upset about that?
Well, no, because you would probably be running late also. And then one thing that didn't happen here, which would definitely have happened in Bhutan, is somebody would have offered me some tea.
Mm-hmm.
They did give me water.
Well, we offer tea.
Yes, you actually did offer tea, yes. So in that way, the Leonard Lopez show is a lot like Bhutan.
We're very Bhutanese here.
Yeah, I think you are.
Linda Leeming's book is called Married to Bhutan, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss. It's published by Hay House. Well, you can't talk about Bhutan without talking about the concept of gross national happiness.
Absolutely, yes.
Are people obviously happy? How much of this concept is just an idea and not something that can be enforced? Because I was thinking about it. There have to be unhappy marriages, troubled children. There are criminals,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. All of that, yes. The unhappy marriages, you know, one thing I notice in Bhutan, I mean, people aren't really like unhappily married because they just get unmarried. And also one thing I noticed.
What does that mean? It's easy to get divorced or you just leave?
Well, if you're a certain age, there is no marriage.
You just live together?
Well, I mean, yes, and in that sense, it is a marriage. But it's sort of, you know, in the village, you don't have a marriage. You don't have any money. You just get with somebody and you're married, you know. I mean, for the world, for the village, for everybody, you're married. So then what happens is maybe you have a bunch of kids. Maybe, you know, it's not really working out. Maybe it's matrilineal. Most of the country of Bhutan is matrilineal. So, and it's a really smart thing to do, especially if you're agrarian, because the husband comes over and the woman inherits the property. The property stays in the family. So if maybe the husband's not working out, or maybe he's drinking too much and, you know, not being industrious, or maybe there's not enough kids, you know, because you got to have kids to run a farm, then the village head man or woman will come, and it's kind of like before television, this is what they did. You know, they'd have maybe a week-long, I don't know, like case. And everybody would talk and decide and hammer out what they should do. And everybody sort of decided, and there would be eating and drinking and cooking involved. So it was kind of almost a form of entertainment.
Well, like most modern nations, Bhutan's 650,000 people consist of several ethnic groups. And in recent years, we've seen some tension there. How does that fit in with the gross national happiness?
Well, that's a good question. To give you a perspective, the tension, the migration, mostly of ethnic Nepalese, because in Nepal's really, really got a lot of problems. They've had a 10-year Maoist civil war, and now the Maoists are trying to kind of assimilate into the government. And anyway, Nepal's got a lot of problems. The government's kind of sold off their natural resources, so there's 17 million ethnic Nepalese in and around the area, the northeastern part of India. 27 million actually live in Nepal. So, you
Not
know,
27 million.
27 million people live in Nepal.
Oh, mm-hmm. And we're only talking about 650,000 people
in Bhutan.
But the Nepalese in the north were brought in by the Bhutanese in the end of the last century because they wanted them to farm an area that was being neglected. Mm-hmm. They came, mm-hmm. they married, they became, in fact, there was a Citizen Act in 1985, mm-hmm. Which, was that the first one that allowed, that said everybody's a citizen? And then
I think maybe 1958.
1958, right.
And this is an area where, I mean, the political side of all of this, I really...
But I'm the only reason I'm asking is, are you even aware of this kind of tension? There's huge refugee camps now in India and in Nepal, because these problems can't be worked out in a country that talks about gross national happiness.
Well, Bhutan is a little island of stability, and it's a little sovereign nation. And I think if you're part of the country, then I think if you're a citizen, you can stay in the country. But if you're not, there's a lot of migration in that part of the world.
Well, we have done shows on the negative side, but we're not going to stress that now. You write, happiness can't be willed. You have to get in the right situation and then let it come to you. I learned this living in Bhutan. Is that how you met the man who would become your husband?
Yes, I was in a very happy place. And I think probably for the first time in my life, I even thought about marriage. And it's a very unusual marriage. Because, we come from two very, very different cultures. But I think it's successful because I did sort of, in a way, marry Bhutan. I made a real commitment to be there.
Well, what is the courtship process like? Are Bhutanese families accepting of outsiders?
His family was very accepting. It was a very, they're a very religious family. They're not very prominent, politically or otherwise. They're just very kind, loving people. And yeah, they did accept me. They treat me very, very nicely.
Well, are you grateful that you made the sacrifice to leave your life in America to live in Bhutan?
I absolutely wouldn't have it any other way. I adore the place. I can't wait to get back.
On the other hand, if a lot of people felt the way you did, wouldn't that cause trouble?
Yes, it would. So that's why I advocate finding your own Bhutan. You know, you don't have to travel. I think some people should stay and be on WNYC and have a brilliant career. And I think you really should find your own bliss.
Well, in your case, are you married in the old-fashioned Western way, or are you married in the Bhutanese
way?
We are
so married. We're married in the Bhutanese way. We started that off. And then, because of visas and all that kind of stuff, we went actually to his village. And then we got married over here because my parents kind of, I guess they wanted to,
Well, they wanted to be part of your wedding experience.
They wanted to be part of our experience.
And give
they
you
wanted to meet
presents.
My husband. You know, we said no presents because we were headed back to Bhutan. We got a nutcracker, and it was such a an issue. It was very heavy, and there's a weight limit, and my husband didn't want to take it, and it broke as soon as we got home. So, and then he went outside and he got a rock, and he said, "Here's a nutcracker," and he cracked a nut with it.
Well, you're still writing.
Yes.
Beyond writing a memoir about your experience in Bhutan, do you still find a lot of interesting things to write about?
I'm writing about Bhutan, and Hay House is interested in another book about us. We've been coming and going from the U.S. So, and my husband is a traditionally trained tonka painter. He trained to be a monk. But he didn't become a monk. He went to the traditional art school and became a master painter, and then he taught painting. That's how we met. So,
can he make a living selling tonkas?
Yes. Are you interested in commissioning a piece? No. His move from Bhutan to the U.S., you know, becoming a part of this culture, mm-hmm. living here, working here, has been amazing. It's a little bit easier if you go from a big culture to a small culture.
So you divide your time between the two countries?
Or
are you living here
that.
At this moment?
We're living here at this moment. We were there for about 4 months last year. So, you know, with the book and with his paintings and things. But we plan to go back there.
The book is called Married to Bhutan, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss. It is published by Hay House. And thank you, Linda Leeming, for being on our show today.
Thank you so much.